जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 18, which is entitled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmana Boy. Text 18.
Sutta Uvacha. Aho vayam janma pritho dahamsa, vrittanu vrittapi viloma jatha, yashpulyam adim vidonoti sikram, mahatmanam abhidana yogah, aho vayam janma vritho dahamsa, vrittanu vrittapi viloma jatah, yashpulyam adhyam vidonoti sikram, mahatmanam abhidana yoga, Aho vayam janma brito dhyahamsa. Vridhanu vritapi veloma jataha. Dashkulyam adhyam vidonoti shikram. Mahatmanam abhidana yoga. Aho vayam janma vritto dhyahamsa. Vritam vrityapi veloma. Uliyam madhyam vidonoti shikram. Mahatmanam abhidana yoga. Aho vayam janma vritto dhyahamsa. Vrittam vrityapi veloma jatam. Yamagin vidonoti shikram. Mahatmanam abhidana yoga.
Sutta Uvacha. Sutta Goswami said, Aho, how, vayam, we, Janma Britta, promoted in birth, Adya, today, Ha, clearly, Asma, have become, Vritta Anuvritya, by serving those who are advanced in knowledge, Api, although, Viloma Jata, born in a mixed caste. Daushkulyam. Disqualification of birth. Adim. Sufferings. Vidunoti. Purifies. Shigram. Very soon. Mahatmanam. Of those who are great. Abhidana. Conversation. Yogaha. Connection. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Sutta Goswami said, O God, although we are born in a mixed caste, we are still promoted in birthright simply by serving and following the great who are advanced in knowledge. Even by conversing with such great souls, one can, without delay, cleanse oneself of all disqualifications resulting from lower births. Purport. Sutta Goswami did not take his birth in a Brahmana family. He was born in a family of mixed caste, or an uncultured low family. But because of higher association, like Sri Shukadev Goswami and the great rishis of Naimisharanya, certainly the disqualification of inferior birth was washed off. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed this principle in pursuance of the Vedic usages, and by his transcendental association, he elevated many lowborn, or those disqualified by birth or action, to the status of devotional service, and established them in the position of acharyas, or authorities. He clearly stated that any man, whatever he may be, whether a brahmana or shudra by birth, or a householder or mendicant in the order of society, if he is conversant with the science of Krishna, he can be accepted as an acharya or guru, a spiritual master. Sutta Goswami learned the science of Krishna from great rishis and authorities like Shukadev and Vyasadev, and he was so qualified that even the sages of Naimisharanya eagerly wanted to hear from him the science of Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he had the double association of great souls by hearing and preaching. Transcendental science, or the science of Krishna, has to be learned from the authorities, and when one preaches the science, he becomes still more qualified. So Sutta Goswami had both the advantages, and thus undoubtedly he was completely freed from all disqualifications of low birth and mental agonies. This verse definitely proves that Srila Shukadeva Goswami did not refuse to teach Sutta Goswami about the transcendental science, nor did the sages of Naimisharanya refuse to hear lessons from him because of his inferior birth. This means that thousands of years ago there was no bar to learning or preaching the transcendental science because of inferior birth. The rigidity of the so-called caste system in Hindu society became prominent within only 100 years or so, when the number of dvija bandhus, or disqualified men in the families of higher castes, increased. Lord Sri Chaitanya revived the original Vedic system, and he elevated Thakur Haridas, the position of Namacharya, or the authority in preaching the glories of the holy name of the Lord, although His Holiness Srila Haridas Thakur was pleased to appear in a family of Mohammedans. Such is the power of pure devotees of the Lord. The Ganges water is accepted as pure, and one can become purified after taking a bath in the water of the Ganges. But as far as the great devotees of the Lord are concerned, they can purify a degraded soul even by being seen by the lowborn. And what to speak of association? Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to purify the whole atmosphere of the polluted world by sending qualified preachers all over the world, and it remains within the Indians to take up this task scientifically and thus do the best kind of humanitarian work. The mental diseases of the present generation are more acute than bodily diseases. It is quite fit and proper to take up the preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world without delay. Mahatmanam Abhidana also means dictionary of great devotees, or a book full of the words of great devotees. Such a dictionary of the words of great devotees and those of the Lord are in the Vedas and our allied literatures, specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Ajnantimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Vaganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakambitam Sacha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So humbly beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees that we can say something for the pleasure of Shishi Radhesham, and may our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. May the devotees derive benefit. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 1, Chapter 18, which is entitled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmana Boy. Text 18. Sri Suta Goswami said, O God, although we are born in a mixed caste, we are still promoted in birthright simply by serving and following the great who are advanced in knowledge. Even by conversing with such great souls, one can, without delay, cleanse oneself of all disqualifications resulting from lower births. So, Suta Goswami, he starts off this chapter by continuing his glorification of King Parikshit. King Parikshit is also known as Vishnu Ratha, which means that he was protected by the Lord, protected by Vishnu when he was in the womb of his mother. And he was born, and as he grew older and began to manifest so many divine qualities, he was looked after by Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was looked after by Kripacharya, so many great souls. And finally he was enthroned as the king. Such a glorious king, so noble, so strong. And he was so loved by everyone. And most importantly, he was completely surrendered at the lotus feet of the Lord. So he was right in his prime. He was just enthroned as the king, and he had all these glorious qualities. So a person might think, oh, this is the reason why he was protected in the womb. So finally he could come to this point of being this glorious devotional king. Imagine how much good will come from this now. This is why Krishna protected him in the womb. But no. Right at the height of his glory, right at the height of so many possibilities of doing good in this world as a king, he was cursed to die. So that can be confusing for us, right? Because we think, well, he was favored by the Lord. He was protected in the womb. And finally, he's come to this point as king. And instead of being the beginning of something, he's cursed to die. You know, life is like this sometimes, you know. Just imagine there's a woman, she has so many good motherly qualities, and her whole life she's desiring a child. And maybe she struggles with that. Finally, a child is born. Now, if that mother was suddenly taken away, you would think, well, what was the point? You know, whole life this was a desire. And then some illness comes or something like that. So it's natural to question. Parikshit was protected and then soon after cursed to die. But how did Parikshit take it? It says, na samu moha, that he was not confused at all when he was cursed to die. na uro bayat. He was not at all fearful to die. So Parikshit was exactly the same response in the protection and in the cursing. The same exact response. He was the same in victory and in defeat. He was the same in joy and in sorrow. And he was the same in life and in death. And this quality of being the same with whatever's happening, whatever comes our way, if we respond with the same attitude, this is so pleasing to Krishna. And again and again in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, bhaktasteteva me priya, that devotee who has that quality, who's equal-minded in joy and sorrow, that devotee is most dear to me. So we see Parikshit, what an example. If the Lord suddenly protects you, of course you will say, wow, the Lord has been so merciful. But then suddenly, soon after, you're cursed to die. You may not think the same thing. But they have the same response. Yes, the Lord is so merciful. There must be some opportunity of service here. There must be some opportunity. Parikshit always had that mindset. And so, na samu moha. He was not confused at all. He was not bewildered when that news came. And he just immediately prepared himself. Gangayam swam kalevaram. He went to the Ganga to give up his body. And he took shelter. It says, Vayasaki jahushasho. He became the disciple of Shukadeva Goswami. He humbly bowed down to Shukadeva Goswami. Please instruct me. What is the duty? What is my duty? And what is the duty of everyone who's about to die? So in the stages of Naimasharanya, Sutta Goswami, of course, previously have talked about the birth of Parikshit and so many things. When the sages of Naimasharanya were listening, they felt so inspired. And they told Sutta Goswami, "Oh Sutta, we've come here for all these sacrifices at Naimasharanya, these fire sacrifices, and now our bodies are covered in smoke. And to be honest, we're doubtful even if we're getting the result that we expect." You know, the sages gathered for great sacrifices, many, many sacrifices. But they're saying here that, what did we get from this sacrifice, these fire sacrifices? We're covered in dark smoke and ash. We're unsure if it's actually even effective. But one thing we can say for certain, the true sacrifice is that you are speaking so nicely about the Lord and His devotees. So please go on telling us the glories of King Parikshit. Go on speaking. This is the true sacrifice. There is no doubt about that. It is completely auspicious. So they encourage Sutta Goswami in this way. And here we're hearing, after that encouragement to speak, to continue speaking, we're hearing the deep humility of Sutta Goswami before speaking again about Parikshit. That's what this verse is today. When there's deep humility, this allows Krishna to speak through us. I was looking at a nice verse I wanted to read. Krishna Das Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, if you think that I have written this Chaitanya Charitamrita, I have to correct you. That is a wrong understanding. Actually, I am old right now, very old. I am blind. I am deaf. And as I'm writing with my hand, my hand is actually trembling because of my invalidity. Yet, I'm writing this. So you might wonder how that's possible. And he tells his readers that, this may be controversial, but I cannot remain silent. I'm actually receiving dictation from Sri Madan Mohan. This is how I'm doing this. He also says, I am very low-born. I am very foolish. I am incapable. But it is the order of the Vaishnavas that I do this, and I'm taking shelter of the Vaishnavas, and Sri Madan Mohan is directly giving me the knowledge. I have to read that verse. So beautiful. He says, okay, phone's not working. It happens when you rely on these things. But anyway.
What do you want?
No, I was looking up a verse, but it's okay. I gave the gist of it. Where he's saying how incapable he is, and yet he's writing, because the Lord is speaking through him. Just imagine that. To be so deep in humility that you're just taking shelter, and as you speak, you can feel, actually they're not your words, but the Lord Himself is speaking through you. Perfect truth. So, when that's the case, what's the question of a good birth or a bad birth? What's the question of high qualifications in the material world and low qualifications? When the task is the same for both, the task is to surrender your material identity altogether to the Lord and be used as an instrument. If that's the challenge for both the wealthy or the poor, it's the same challenge. We're all on an equal footing, in a sense, whatever our conditioning is, because it's still the same thing that has to be done. You have to surrender to the Lord and be used to be an instrument of the Lord. So in that sense, when you think of wealthy, poor, high birth, low birth, good situation, bad situation, in a sense, both people have the same challenge, to give up those ideas and to surrender and trust that the Lord can use you. So, advantages, disadvantages in the material world, in a sense, they're not so important. But somehow this realization has to come, and it comes through the devotee who's awakened spiritually, directing us back to the Lord, encouraging us to surrender, to trust that we can surrender to the Lord. Someone who's very poor can get that information in a low birth, and it can just touch the heart. And someone who's very wealthy, high birth, that can also touch their heart, that message. So it looks like the material conditioning is a very important factor, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it is important. There needs to be a basic, healthy life. If you have too much wealth, that can also be a disadvantage spiritually. And if you have too much suffering, if you're too poor, that can also be a disadvantage to spiritual life. Sometimes, but not always. Because there's this mysterious thing that's happening in the heart of each person, which is called faith. Faith is not of this material world, true faith. There's faith within the modes of nature. The Bhagavad Gita explains, there's faith in the mode of goodness, faith in the mode of passion, faith in the mode of ignorance. And then there's something called nirguna shraddha. Nirguna means not of the modes of nature. A faith that is not within the material world, a faith that is actually injected into the heart of a living being by the mercy of a devotee. So whatever your material qualifications, good or bad, may be, if you somehow come in contact and you hear nicely from a pure devotee, that can awaken a faith that is not of this world, an inclination to return to the Lord. That's what faith is. What brings us here? Why do we continue to chant? Why do we continue to hear? something in the heart has awakened. Some inclination is there, and that's the most sacred thing that we have. That is far superior to what our conditioning is. Our conditioning will simply change with life after life. It just switches around, moves around, good, bad. Krishna's Kaviraj says, those ideas, good and bad, this is good and bad, mental concoctions. But they're all important when we don't have that faith. They become all important to people. Right? We're fighting over better positions, superior situation, whatever it may be. It becomes so important to people because they haven't been touched by the absolute truth. And so they think that the material situation is the all in all. But when real faith is awakened, we think, oh, actually, the material conditioning is less important than I thought. I actually want it to weaken, and I want this faith to grow. What is that faith called when it fully blossoms? Rupa Goswami explains this. When that little faith, that inclination to serve, that inclination to hear, to chant, to associate with devotees, it's like a little tiny seed that just starts growing. But when it fully develops, the name changes. It's no longer called faith. It's called prema. It's called love of God. It's the same thing, actually. That little faith that we have is love of God. And it's very first sprouting. So, we think, you know, how did this situation start where I'm conditioned in this material world? If I'm this pure soul, the servant of Krishna, we always like to go back to the origin of things, because when we understand the origin of things, then we understand what's happening, how we got here, and then also what's necessary to return to the Lord. So the origin is that we are spiritual beings. There's a spiritual self. And that spiritual self, for whatever reason, desired something impossible. We desired something that's impossible. But even what's impossible becomes possible in a certain sense, right? You think about it, right now it would be impossible if I just started flying, right? That's impossible. But it's possible in my mind if I fantasize about it. It's possible if I dream about it. So in the same way, the spirit soul wanted something impossible. The spirit soul wanted to be the controller, the creator, the doer, the enjoyer. That's actually not possible. But the spirit soul can kind of imagine it, can dream it, and that dream becomes a reality, and that's this material world. That's our personalities right now. It's kind of like a dream of the soul. But that dream self comes alive and has a life of its own, pretending to be in control of things, pretending to create its own life. But actually, because we've surrendered to Maya, it was a surrender to Maya, and then Maya takes over completely. And we think we're controlling our lives, and we're creating situations, and we're doing things. But really, it's the modes of material nature. They're operating, and we are surrendered to it. It's so hard to believe this, right? It's so hard to believe that I have no control. But it's true. Eventually, the free will can awaken, and one can start to have a certain control. But, you know, my wife, she just... We were just talking the other day, and this is just an interesting point I've been thinking about. And she had this, she wanted this position for a long time as a professor at Santa Fe College, and she just got it. Haribo. So she was reflecting a little bit on how did this happen. And she traced it back. And we can do this. If you start to think about where you are in life right now, trace it back and you'll see that some random decision or occurrence that seemed to be random, it seemed to be you controlling it. But that happened, and then this happened, and then that happened, and then suddenly it came to you. So she was reflecting that. She traced it back to complimenting one man about his shirt. She realized how that led to her getting this position. Because in New York, she had complimented one man if he was wearing a nice shirt. She said, "That's a nice shirt." That man ended up being like a professor at this, you know, school in New York, which my wife was attending. And then there was a relationship that somehow built. Later it became the professor. He became aware. He gave a recommendation. There was some relationship that continued. And she took a class with him. And if she didn't take that class, she wouldn't have qualified for the position here in Florida, Santa Fe. So it looks like she had the freedom in that moment to say, nice shirt. But actually things are unfolding. Things are meant to happen according to karma. And it looks like I'm every moment I have free will. I'm going to decide this today. I'm going to decide that. But we forget our minds are also programmed. Our starting point is we're assuming that we have the freedom to choose at every moment. That comes later, actually. That comes once a devotee comes into our life. Then something new is there. Some other new possibility awakens. And then we start to get from that mercy of the devotee and the service to the devotee, you start to realize, oh, I'm actually controlled. This is all karmic reaction. But now, how do I get out of that? What is the way to actually truly make a choice? How do I choose Krishna in the midst of all of my karma? Therefore, Prabhupada says, the only choice is between Maya and Krishna. And the fact is, we surrendered to Maya long, long ago. And so material nature just takes over your life. Just like when you surrender to Krishna, He'll take over your life. So we are dependent, always. Either I surrender here and get ruled by material energy, or I surrender here and get ruled by the spiritual energy. Get used by the spiritual energy for service. That's the choice. So third canto in the Bhagavatam speaks about this, 27th chapter, talks about that we are spirit souls, but we are misidentifying with this conditioned self. And so many things are taking place, and one is simply ruled by the material energy until one finally wakes up from the dream. Waking up. So how do we wake up? We have to stop feeding the dream. There's a way of living and acting that keeps sustaining the dream. If I'm in a dream right now, this is not my true self. This is not the true world I meant to be in. But I desired something and then the facilities were given by the Lord. That is this whole material creation. It is a facility given by the Lord for a distorted desire of the living being. But here we are. So now, it's kind of like a dream. When I say dream, don't think unreal. Because dream is also real. Even when you have a dream at night, you can't really say it's completely unreal. It's an experience, isn't it? It's also an experience. It's not nothing. It's something. So in the same way, the material world, it's compared often to a dream, but we shouldn't think some dreamy illusion that has no substance. This is, you know, there's a reality to it, but it's not the highest reality. Just like when you dream at night, there's a reality to it, but you know when you wake up in the morning, oh, this is more real. My day today, this is more real than the dream. So in the same way, when someone wakes up spiritually, they have the realization that now that I'm awake spiritually, this is more real than the dream called material existence. So, how do we wake up? We have to stop feeding, stop sustaining the dream. How do we do that? How does one sustain the dream? It is by reaching out for it again and again, controlling it, filling ourselves up, because it's the false self, right? This is not the true me. But if I keep filling it up, I'm charging it up, I'm sustaining the false self. We do that through many ways. When we want reputation, I feel very good now. I feel great. This pride fills us up. Sense gratification also fills us up, right? If you're, you know, it gives us some comfort. I like these things. Let me take it into myself. And whatever you get into in material life gets into you. And it kind of gives you life. You know, it gives you a certain strength, but it's strength to the wrong person. It's strength to the conditioned nature. It strengthens the conditioned nature. It strengthens the ego. So therefore, Queen Kunti, she says these things. Well, if you get that wealth that you want, if you get the education, all of it is a filling up, filling up, filling up. So if one decides, I'll no longer fill myself up, what will happen? If one stops taking all those things in, what happens? Then you start to feel a little empty. We'll start to feel empty because there are certain pleasures that we've gotten so used to that if you try to fast from them, what happens when you fast? A little weaker, a little empty. Maybe you start to even feel a little bit lonely. We want it again. Reach out to it, grab it. But if we can persevere when we're feeling a little empty, if we can endure that pain, it's a pain actually, because we're so used to filling ourselves up with pleasure and excitements and something new. But if we can patiently endure the little bit of pain that's there by not reaching out for some pleasure, then what does that do? This is the key. This is the key, to get a little, allow yourself to get a little bit empty. Because when in that state of emptiness, there's going to be a longing that awakens for the Lord. There's going to be a way that our hearing will change. Our chanting will change because we need it. We need the shelter of the Lord. See, if you're already filled up, you cannot take shelter of the Lord. This is what Queen Kunti is saying in that verse, that one must become materially exhausted, not filling themselves with high education, high birth, with beauty and beautiful things, with pleasures. So every time we try to bring it into myself, whether it's reputation or pleasure, or wealth, and we just look at ourselves throughout our day and see, where do I go to get that fill? Let me try today to not do that. That's all. Don't make a lifelong vow now to stop all pleasure. That will not work. But in one day, perhaps there's something you do that you realize is actually not the best thing for you, a little harmful. Maybe it's just too much time on the internet, whatever it may be. And then you'll see, when you want to stop it for today, you're going to start to feel that urge to, no, but what are you going to do then? You're going to be so bored. And then day two comes. Oh my God, the boredom is so strong now. I got to do something. I can't sit still. I got to. And then day three. And then you'll see if you persevere, if you get through a little bit time, it'll start to weaken the attraction. But you'll still be left with a kind of emptiness. But now with that emptiness, take shelter of the devotees. Take shelter of the holy name. If you're filled up, Queen Kunti says, then you cannot sincerely chant the name of the Lord. You cannot sincerely do it. So we don't want to sustain this dream self. We don't want to keep filling up the dream self. We want to let it die. Slowly, gradually, carefully, with the right association, with the right understanding also. Because it would be impossible to think I'll stop it all now completely. But I do want to move in that direction. So for this one thing, this one habit, whatever it may be, for today, I'm going to leave it alone. Tomorrow it may grow stronger. And if you can resist that. And if you fail, also don't be too hard on yourself. This is a process. So if you fail in that, just pick yourself back up and try again. And Krishna's starting to see the effort. He's starting to see the sincerity, and he'll start to give the strength to overcome it. We cannot overcome it, actually. Again, it's us thinking that we can control. It's an illusion to think that we're going to overcome all our bad habits. But we need to try so that we get the realization that I can't. So the only thing left to do is to surrender to the Lord. And then the Lord, from within, His energy starts working through us. He gives the ability. He gives the strength. He gives the insight. This is what Sutta Goswami is saying here in this verse, that I am low-born. I have no qualification. How is this possible that I'll continue to speak? How am I speaking to all of these great sages? What's my qualification? Materially speaking, no qualification. But the Lord has blessed me. Because of Sutta Goswami's deep humility, Akinchana, because he's realizing his nothingness, he realizes his own nothingness, then he can be used by the Lord, and the Lord can speak through him. So a devotee is always in a state of amazement, a pure devotee. Because they realize that all these things are happening, but it's not me. It's happening through me by the grace of the Lord. How amazing is that? That the Supreme Lord, the creator of everything, would be aware of my little existence and to begin to use me as a servant for his work. And then you yourself feel yourself being used in that way. That is ecstasy. That is the ecstasy of a devotee. That is the ecstasy of Krishnadas Kaviraj when he says that I'm an old invalid. I can't even see right now. I can't even hear properly. I can't stop shaking my body. I'm so old. He was in his 90s, I believe, when he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he's writing this on palm leaves. Chaitanya Charitamrita is unbelievable. Spiritual masterpiece. An old man, just imagine, he's sitting there trembling, can't hear, can't see. But he gives the secret. How's it happening? Madan Mohan, from within, is guiding, is dictating, is giving the power to complete this. So, this is how we're meant to live. We're meant to be used in that way by the Lord. Prabhupada. You know, verses like this are very important to Srila Prabhupada, because this was his mission and this was his heart, to show that material birth, high or low, this is not so important. This was Prabhupada's mission. This was his faith, that he will come to the West, and whatever the background, whatever the conditioning, everyone can be, what's nicely said here in this verse, Sutta Goswami says, Janma Britta. That the birth can be promoted. Whatever your material birth is, it will be promoted by the association of the great souls. Prabhupada had faith in this. And this purport is filled with examples. Haridas Thakur, he was born outside of the whole Vedic system. In a Muslim family, he was born. And Chaitanya, that meant nothing to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Whatever he's born, whatever the religion, whatever the culture, he's Namacharya. He is the authority on the holy name. Krishna always shows this example in the world that birth is not essential. Even Veda Vyas, the author of all the Vedic literatures, is said to be born from a mixed caste also. Right? His mother was Satyavati, who was the daughter of a fisherman. Fisherman is not high birth. You're fishing. Veda Vyas, Haridas Thakur. So many examples. Ramananda Rai spoke to Lord Chaitanya. And the same thing, what did Ramananda Rai say? That I'm not speaking actually. Lord Chaitanya, you are speaking through me. I don't know how it's happening. And it's not just speaking. This is how we're meant to move in the material world. This is how we're meant to live. That the Lord is moving me. The Lord from within is giving me strength to overcome this conditioning. It is not my power. I have no power. I've surrendered my power to Maya, so Maya is acting. But now I'm starting to see that by the mercy of the Lord. So now I want to surrender to the Lord and have Him act through me. And when that happens, that is the perfection of life. That is a truly successful life. That's how we're all meant to be living. This is the whole point of the material world, the material creation, is to realize that this is what it's all about. To return to the lotus feet of Krishna and be used in His service for His pleasure. So that requires what I'm mentioning here, giving up a little bit some of those, that pull to keep taking in from the material, to keep living off the material energy. You see? We want to live off of it, and it fills us up. It's filling up the material self. It's filling up the ego. And we live longer. Another birth. Because you're so filled up. Another birth. Next birth. I fill myself up again. That requires another birth. We're charging a battery. If you keep charging the battery, it will keep operating. But if you stop charging, slowly, stop charging, feel the emptiness, and use that emptiness by taking shelter of the Lord and His devotees, coming under another energy. Another energy will start to come into our hearts. And one day we're going to wake up and we're going to realize all those attachments, somehow they're not so important to me anymore. How did that happen? What was so much binding me before is less of a pull. This is not my power, but some mercy has come. Being able to let go just a little bit. And I'm also, there's an attraction that's growing. The hearing, the chanting. Where did that attraction come from? It's not my doing. But the Lord has entered in to me slightly, and these changes are taking place. How wonderful is the Lord that He's doing this. And gratitude fills the heart. And when that gratitude overwhelms us, more and more we think, I want to reciprocate, I want to serve more. I want to serve more. More quantity and more quality, both. You can hear Prabhupada in one conversation where he's speaking about the devotee becomes ecstatic and he thinks more service, I want to do more service. It's hard for us to imagine that because we think it's me that's going to be able to do that. I'm so far away from that. But it's not us. It's a surrender, by the surrender to the Lord, and He, a desire, is there to want more, to serve more. That will naturally and spontaneously manifest. So, again, I'll just end by reading the same verse for today. And if there are any thoughts, comments, or questions, we'll stop here. But again, this is 1st Canto, 18th chapter, 18th verse. Sutta Goswami said, O God, although we are born in a mixed caste, we are still promoted in birthright simply by serving and following the great who are advanced in knowledge. Even by conversing with such great souls, one can without delay cleanse oneself of all disqualifications resulting from lower births. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Me? Do I get it? My turn? Yeah. I just made a choice. So that's my question. So sometimes we talk like, oh, we only have two, I'm playing with the idea. We only have two choices, it's Krishna or Maya, and then we're under the control. Sometimes in my, you know, the thought that comes to me, whether it's from Krishna or Maya, is that, you know, sometimes you can frame that, it's sort of like we have all kinds of choices all day long, but you really only have two main choices. You're going to go to work, or you're going to, you know, hang around and watch TV all day and do nothing with your life. You know, then everything else gets framed by that. You know, you're going to, you know, pursue a career and get your life together, you're going to just hang around and,
yeah,
and take herbal enhancements all day, you know. Mm-hmm. So, because it seems like we have all, I mean, Krishna invests us with autonomy, otherwise there's no scope for relationship. So we can misuse the autonomy, so that's one choice, or you know, and so on and so forth. So then, you know, we willfully embrace wanting an alternate reality. You know, there's a choice there. And, you know, that we want to explore the material energy. We want that. And, or, you know, or maybe a little bit of a mix. Or you know, so or we want to that relationship with Krishna without the distraction. So this, it seems, you know, without, you know, it's the same principle. It seems, though, there's a lot of autonomy in the individual, and that's what the design is all about. You know, and without it undermining, we really do have two main choices, but within that context, there's all kinds of agency.
Well, it's interesting, because if that's true, then how is it that a true astrologer can predict your whole life?
Do they really predict your life, or is the astrology, it's like highway signs, like New York 200 miles? Or,
well, that's what I mean, but they see something.
Well, of course.
And almost 100% of the time we fulfill that. If it's the right astrologer, I'm not saying every astrologer has this ability, but if you actually find a true astrologer who knows the science and can see things, how is it that it can be determined, even though it seems every moment we're free?
Well, yeah. I would challenge you how deterministic astrology is. I think it's more, you know, the thought that comes to me, it's more sign points reflective of the karmic momentum that we have.
That's right, but when it's figured out correctly, when it's interpreted correctly by the astrology, it will be accurate.
Yeah, but accurate, you know, again, you know, that highway sign says New York 200 miles away. It's very accurate.
Right.
But all the adventures between here and there could be all kinds of variety.
Yeah, certainly there are. Yeah. Certainly, I'm not completely denying. It's an interesting thing because we see that it feels as if every moment we're making choices. Yes, it feels that way. It feels I have freedom at every moment. But when we really start to, like I was giving the example of tracing things back, well, if that day I didn't do that, then this would have never happened. If you start to look at your life that way, you start to become really amazed at how much little control we have.
Yeah, again, I'm not saying it's not like either we have this unlimited freedom as if we're a pure devotee or if we're a Purusha, you know, a Krishna, or we have none at all. You know, I'm, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, because the thought that's coming here is, I've said this before in class, it's like, if you misapply your autonomy, you know, from our understanding of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, of the pure full expression of freedom is in pure devotional service. You know, the mode of goodness is more facility. The mode of passion is restricted. The more you explore, the more ignorance, it gets even more restricted to the point it could be a rock someplace, you know, or whatever, symbolically. So what I'm driving at is, there's like a metaphor of like someone may have misused their relative freedom and now they're in prison. It could be in a minimum security prison. They have all, oh, I could do this, I could do that,
right,
but I'm still in prison. Or they could be in that place in Colorado where they're locked in some room and the only autonomy they have every day is a plate that slipped under the door. And do I want to eat the mashed potatoes first or the peas
right
first? So, you know, but there's still relative degrees of autonomy.
Perhaps.
Well, we see that.
Perhaps. Because if you, why does a person go up to goodness and a person go down to ignorance? What determines that? You think it's the freedom, but I'm saying it could be the modes within that person.
We embrace it, Prabhupada said, you know, it's like you want Maya. It's not like, oh, Maya is so powerful.
Right. So we've surrendered to Maya, and Maya is working.
Yeah, but sense gratification, you can move on, but sense gratification, it's all a reflection of our desire.
And why do you have certain desires that are different than mine?
What?
Why are your desires different than mine?
What? Because we're individual autonomy. We're individual autonomy.
No, it's because the modes of material nature.
We've embraced them through
yes,
our desires.
That is the, that was the choice, to embrace Maya, and now Maya.
One more. Like, I could decide to come to this class.
Well, we can talk later. I have many verses to show. And then
yeah, it's a big decision, but I can't help myself. I came to this class, and I wasn't to this class here, and now I've made a choice, and now I'm under certain.
Why did you make that choice?
But it's just a metaphor. Well, I could have gone to the preaching center.
But you didn't. Why not?
Yeah, but it's
always the same situation where you have to determine.
All right. I'll tell you why I made the choice, because I'm lazy and I want to drive to Gainesville. It's a lot closer.
And there you go. So there. Oh, interesting.
That was a powerful one.
Okay,
let's put it
this way.
Otherwise,
this
whole conversation is just a mechanical thing.
No, because
sometimes there's some limitation to the time you have for a person.
We can talk more. I'm happy to talk more.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. Beautiful. I really enjoyed it. I was thinking, there was an age where high birth was glorified, you know, and it was because high birth means highest devotion to Krishna. That was an age where the Brahmanas were glorified, you know, like in Treta Yoga and Dwapara Yoga. But in Kali Yuga, it's irrelevant now because it doesn't hold the same meaning as those ages. Because otherwise, Lord Krishna would not have even established the divine ashram system, you know. So there was a time when it was relevant, but in this age, it's not relevant.
Yeah.
But thank you for the beautiful.
Thank you, Guru.
I was going to say pretty much what Sita B said at the beginning, that like I believe actually we do have choice.
Yes.
We have to end it. So, but that kind of went on a bit long.
Yes.
But then the only other thing I was going to say was that when you said at the beginning about Krishnadas Kaviraj was spoken to by Madam Mohan, the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah.
That just made me think also of Prabhupada, because there's so many instances where Prabhupada said that it wasn't him writing his purports and that, it was Krishna was there writing.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Yes, Krishna. Prabhupada said, how am I reading this Krishna book? Again and again, why would an author read his own book? He said, because I have not written this book.
I don't really have much to say, but I was trying to get your attention to say that I found the verse you were looking for.
Oh, thank you. You can read it, please, if you'd like.
Okay. Akshi Chaitanya Charitamrita is not my writing, but the dictation of Sri Madan Mohan. My writing is like the repetition of a parrot. Of course, there's a wonderful purport. And then the
yes.
next words, do you want me to read the purport?
No, that's okay. But
okay.
The purport I would highly recommend to read that for everybody. Such a nice purport.
And the next verse is also really nice. As a wooden doll is made to dance by a magician, I write as Madan Gopal orders me to do so.
Yes.
And this one sentence here, I just want to read in the context of our discussion here. This is the position of a pure devotee. One should not take any responsibility on his own, but should be a soul surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who will then give him dictation of the Chaitanya Guru or the spiritual master.
Thank you.
It's Adi 8, 7, 8, and 7, 9.
Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.